This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
I remember in the past there would be times where I would start talking before the dude started yelling, yay, and it would just sound bad. And so now I just wait until he's done. I let him get his yay done before I talk, because it just feels like it's, you know, it's awkward. I'm talking over him and he's yelling over me, and it just doesn't make for great radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I can tell you how long that particular musical montage has been around. We have some production, is what we call it, left over from, gosh, when Isaac was here working with us. So going back to the days when we jumped to the five nights a week. And some of it's good, and some of it I just think, okay, if I have it memorized from front to back, from top to bottom, then it's time to retire it. But yeah, there's only so much we can do with the two of us. And I mean, it's still catchy, I suppose. I just know now not to talk or not to jump in before the dude is done. Yeah, right? I mean, it just doesn't sound good if you're listening to him screaming and I'm trying to talk. And just it's one of those really awkward moments. Like when you're on a cell phone and there's a bit of a delay and you start talking and the other person starts talking and then you both stop and then you both start talking again. And then you stop, and then you both start talking again. That's great. I love that about cell phones. Or if we're talking about an in-person example, how about when you walk through a door, you're in a hallway, something along those lines, or you're trying to pass someone in a hallway or in a narrow corridor, and you both go to the right. Well, you both go to your right. The other person goes to their left. And so you end up coming face to face, and then you both try to go back the other direction, and then there's this awkward, oh, sorry, like really awful laughter and just uncomfortable giggles, and then you try it again, and the same thing happens.
You know a good line for that situation that a stranger said to me once? It happened, and the guy goes, thanks for the dance.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was like, nice, I like that.
Nice. Or how about this one? This is even worse, I think, than the trying to pass someone in a corridor. Speaking of awkward situations with strangers, is when you go in for this wouldn't be a stranger, but you go in for a hug from someone you don't know really well, and you both go to hug the same direction, right? So you go to your right, and the other person goes to their left, and instead of getting a hug, you either end up face-to-face, which is supremely awkward at times, or the even worse, and this is the go-to move. It's how you avoid coming face to face and nearly exchanging a smooch, is you kind of both turn and put your arms around the other. So it's not really a hug. It's more like a cheek to cheek and arms around each other.
Yes.
Oh, those are the worst. I can think of a few more awkward situations, mostly because I'm awkward, but elevators. I mean, I just jump right in now and have conversations. I don't even care. We're not going to stand there
really?
In awkward silence. Yes.
I've waited to not go in the elevator before because I saw someone's on. I'm like, I can just wait a
minute. Of course you did.
Not worth it.
Of course you did. How about just say hello? How are you?
You can, but it depends.
But it always works well in our situation while we're here at work. I mean, this may not be the case elsewhere. But at work, if we're leaving and going downstairs at 6 a.m., Eastern time, and someone else is also going down, well, then, of course, they work the same hours, so you instantly have a kinship, because the night owls who work these hours, it's tough. We all like to commiserate about how hard this is, or maybe commiserate over morning traffic, or blah, blah, blah. Or it's the opposite, and this is where I get people all the time. They are coming in when I am going out, right? So you're standing in the elevator shaft, you're waiting for the same, well, not the shaft, necessarily. That'd be scary. We would need a Jedi to help us there, levitate. But you're standing near the elevator, you're waiting, or someone's getting in as you're going out. Rather than ignore them completely, I just say, oh, hey, you're coming in. Have a great day. Wait, you're leaving? Oh, yeah. Got here at sa-sa-sa-sa-sa last night and just got done. And whew, am I tired. I mean, you know, every morning on my way out of the building, the security guard has just come in. And I always say to him, good morning, I'm off to the grocery store. Or good morning, I've got to do this. Or
I do say good morning or good night or whatever it is to him.
Good morning, goodbye. Stay warm, right? Are you ready for the rain today? I mean, it's so easy to make small talk. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it's like a challenge. It's just like sometimes if I can avoid a situation, like I'll maybe just do an extra lap. And
why are you so uncommunicative?
It's early. Just Not in this, not every morning,
not
just sometimes, not in the mood.
And
then sometimes people are coming in and they're like, oh, like, good morning, whatever. I'm like, no, it's not that.
But oh, okay.
Not that it's not a good morning, but it's not like my good morning. Like, my day's over, you know, so it's.
It is a morning, though.
Yeah.
So, you know what cured me of that is Penny. Because everyone in my neighborhood, I had her in the same neighborhood we were walking for 8+ years. Actually, almost 9 years. And everyone knew that dog. They knew me only because I walked the dog. But she had walked all over that neighborhood for 9 years, and they all recognized her. She was so friendly, and all the kids want to talk to her, but the adults know her and then recognize me because of Penny. And so for that reason, they would always want to talk. The dog always makes people want to stop and talk. Yep. If the dog is friendly, now if the dog growls or is aggressive, then it's a different story. But if the dog is friendly, and Penny never met a person she didn't like, so for that reason, we always had to have conversations. So it cured me of, because there were times in the morning where I'm walking, Penny would be walking me, not the other way around, and I would just want to go around the block or the other side of the street and just avoid. But you really can't when people are excited to see Penny. It's just,
it is nice to be social, I suppose.
You should start walking Moose.
I don't think he would like that. He would get mad at me. He'd Moose, be like, what are you doing to me?
Moose is not a walker.
No.
He's a wake up, eat, go back to sleep.
Sometimes, yeah, he'll wake up, usually eat right pretty on schedule, and then instantly back into
morning
his bed.
Nap.
Or back
in, yeah, morning nap.
That's too much of that.
I mean, that's what happens when you have a full belly. It happens to humans, too. We need a nap after we eat. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We are all about the awkward conversations. I don't avoid them anymore. I actually think they're fun. But I'm just saying is all that when you are talking and someone else is talking, it just, you know, at some point, somebody's got to shut up. It's not going to be me. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We're asking you about your perspective on March Madness. Would you rather see a bunch of blue bloods / top seeds? I call them low seeds. Some people call them high seeds. So there we go. It's awkward again. Or would you rather see a bunch of double figure seeds, upstarts, Cinderellas, surprises survive? Because this year is decidedly different. It's not that we didn't have upsets. It's that ultimately, in the second round, the top 8 teams all still advanced, right? So you had a bunch of chaos below them, but the Cinderellas, the upstarts, the survivors, they kind of took each other out. And now you've got the top 8 still standing. Are you ready for your March Madness nerd alert? It's a Monday. We need one of these things. Get your brain moving, working. If I tried to tell the Hubs this before he has his coffee, he would just stare at me and blink. There'd be no response whatsoever. For the first time since 2019, and that was the year that Virginia won, right? Pre-COVID, pre-March Madness getting shut down. For the first time since 2019, and for only the 5th time in the last 45 years. I didn't know this until I was reading it because it wasn't a thing. but for me, but 1979, first time that the NCAA used this seeding. You should see my hands right now. I'm creating the charts in the air. It's like routes on air. Anyway, first time was 1979 when we had the seeding like this. And so it's only the fifth time since that point, 45 years ago, that you have all the ones and all the twos reaching the second weekend. So yeah, we don't have a lack of upsets, but what we have is those upsets kind of then had to face each other, or those upsets had to face some of the power schools and then got mowed down. And honestly, it's not a huge surprise, because a lot of times you have a school like a Yale or an Oakland. Now, Oakland was game. They came pretty close to advancing to the Sweet 16. They had some veteran guys. But a Yale or some of these other teams, they give it absolutely everything they've got. James Madison, everything they've got to produce that first upset. Sometimes Grand Canyon, they were also real tough against Alabama until late in the game. Ran out of gas, though. I think didn't score for the final 4 minutes or so. And Alabama just rattled off a bunch of points and pulled away. But that's what happens. They give it everything they've got. Blood, sweat, tears, heart, soul, mind, body, spirit, everything. And then while they're running on adrenaline, of course, they have to play, you know, not even 48 hours later. A lot of times they just run out of gas. And so I want to say easier because that's the wrong word. It's just a little more familiar for the power schools because this is what they do during their conferences, right? This is what they do. They go from tough opponent to tough opponent to tough opponent. Sometimes there's only a 48-hour turnaround, and a lot of times they've got deeper benches. Not always, but a lot of times they've got more guys that can score so it can kind of help in terms of the fresh legs. Or if you're a power school or you're one of the higher seeds, maybe you didn't have to use every last starter into overtime or every last one of your critical guys with some really tough minutes, right? You were able to give them a break in the late stages of your first round game. So there's all kind of factors that play in. And a lot of times we do see a handful of double figure seeds survive to this point, but only NC State, which is just an incredible story. I wouldn't call the Wolfpack a Cinderella, unless you're thinking back to the days of Jim Valvano. But I would say that it's phenomenal what they're doing. So again, battle-tested because they have played through the ACC all year long. And yes, they dropped their last four games of the regular season, which, you know, not that strange in the ACC. But you drop those four games, you play yourself out of contention. The only way you get in is to win your conference tournament. They do that, and now they've rattled off two more wins in March Madness. So you're talking about seven consecutive wins and one of the hottest teams in the country. Now, we know Virginia lost right away out of the ACC, but the rest of the ACC, still dancing. That includes the Blue Devils, who were going against the Duke. So it was Duke against the Dukes on Sunday.
Duke break pressure. Mitchell down the lane to the rim and a right-hand slam for Mark Mitchell. Right down Flatbush Avenue here in Brooklyn to the rim. A deep three from McCain, and it's good. McCain is 6-for-6 from behind the arc. That one was deep. And Duke with a 47-23 lead with 2:15 to go. McCain down the lane. Twisting left hand. Layup is good. McCain says, I can go to the rim too. And Duke dominated. 68-41, they lead it. 11-12 to go in the second half.
When you have a guy like Jared McCain, you know, he broke the Duke record today for threes in the NCAA tournament. We've had some pretty good shooters here. And so to break that record with eight, I'm sure he's mad at me for taking him out early.
It's the best feeling in the world when you know the work you put in is showing up on the court, especially in such a big game like this to go to the Sweet 16. For these types of games, you just want to win, and I want to do everything I can to win. And tonight, if that was making shots, making threes, and then that's what it was. So I'm just grateful to even have this opportunity to go to the Sweet 16.
The freshman Jared McCain hit his first shot in the opening seconds of this game against James Madison and never looked back. 8 of 11 from downtown, 30 points. And as you hear John Shire mention, it is a Duke record. Now, James Madison, I mean, this was a team that, again, gave it everything they had in their 12. They were the 12 seed, the 12-5 victory over Wisconsin So raise your hand if you had Wisconsin going deep. Whoops, that'd be me. So Wisconsin falls out in that first game. James Madison becomes this great story, but then again, has expended a ton of energy, isn't used to this kind of back-to-back competition, and has to go into this game with Duke and really just looked out of gas. Now, the interesting thing about Duke and the question that I asked before the tournament tipped is how would the Blue Devils respond after losing the final game of their season to UNC and then getting bounced early in the ACC tournament to now the red-hot NC State?
This game can humble you. I don't care if you're a coach, if you're a player. You know, our last regular season game, the ACC tournament game, you have to have great humility to understand what you have to do better. And clearly all of us had to do something better. And, you know, there's no replicating the work you need to put in. And the silver lining in that was it gave us a week to work on ourselves, to look in the mirror, to not listen to what people may think or we're done.
I like that point from John Shire. No, it wasn't how they wanted to end the ACC tournament. Who knows whether or not it affected their seed drastically, maybe a little bit, but not probably a ton. Maybe affected where they end up in a bracket, sure. And they've got the top seed, Houston, coming up next. So, yeah, there's that as a 1-4 matchup. Maybe they avoid Houston and it's 2-3 instead. Who knows? Those are ifs and buts. And you know all about those. But he points out that they had a week to regroup, to rest. They certainly look like they've got fresh legs after a long ACC season. And so it was actually a blessing in disguise. They were already in the tournament. It's not how they wanted to end, but they were able to focus on, hey, here's what we need. Here's what we have to do if we don't want to be out early. And now they're into the Sweet 16. Chris Carino with the calls from Brooklyn, which is fun considering that he's familiar. It's a guy that does the Nets broadcasts, right? And so he's comfortable there. That's his home in Brooklyn, meaning Barclays Arena. Also at Barclays, the defending champions, and Dan Hurley with a message about the Big East. And man, if you did not see the Anderson Garcia 3, if that doesn't register, if you don't know what I'm talking about, oh gosh, just wait. So far, one of the shots of the tournament. A memory to be brought back in the One Shining Moment montage at the end of March Madness. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. Good morning to you. It's a Monday, and it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Barnheiser, right wing three. That's too strong. Clinging another rebound. Ahead to Newton. Finds Diarra. Throw to the rim. Baker. Guard. And a foul is called. It's a runaway in Brooklyn. Caravan three straight on. It's good. Just the second three of the game for UConn. It comes from Alex Caravan. And the Huskies, a 23-point lead with under a minute to go before halftime. Diarra, jump pass out of the right wing. Newton a lob. And Johnson lays it in. And UConn, a 59-32 lead with 11:14 to go in the second half.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Once again on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network from the Brooklyn Pod. I don't know if they still call it that, but Chris Carino with the call this time for the UConn Huskies, who really make quick work of their opponent to get to the Sweet 16. And one of the reasons why you'll see a lot of these Power 5 teams have an advantage, or one way that they can really put their opponents from mid-majors or smaller schools at a disadvantage, is because of how they can pound the paint. It's because of what they can do on the boards, the defense in the lane, of course, but really the fact that they can get to the rim so often. And against Northwestern, that emphasis was one they used right off the top. It helps when you have Donovan Clingan, who's 7'2", or for Purdue, you have a Zach Edey, who's well over 7 foot, right? And so the dominating performance really started inside and worked its way out because the Huskies were 3 of 22 from downtown. Imagine making just 3 triples the entire game, and one of them, I think the first one didn't even come until late in the first half, and yet you still win going away. And their lead was more than 20 points. Dan ended up having to put some of his starters back in the game because Northwestern found a groove there and I think cut it to, 15, 16. And so he puts a couple of his starters back in, like Alex Caraban, who was here on the show last week, and Donovan Clingan. But yeah, the three-point shooting, really the only thing that they didn't have in their favor. Not that Northwestern shot well from beyond the arc. They did not. But here they are as the team to beat and so far have been untested. And I think for UConn, really you're gauging your progress and you're gauging where you are based on your own metrics now. You can't base your, you can't evaluate yourself or base your feelings about what you've done to this point on your competition, regardless of who it is. If you're UConn and you play the way that you can and you play at a high level, you should be able to beat any team in the country. Or maybe there's a couple that you couldn't, or that you'd go toe-to-toe with and the result would be hanging in the balance. But UConn is playing exceptionally well, and that's a great tribute to Dan Hurley and how they now have themselves as the gold standard, if that makes sense. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Tristan Newton ends up with 20 points and 10 assists in this victory.
Feels great. You know, we have a big pitch.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
That we want to go to, and we have to take it one step at a time. So, you know, getting to a Sweet 16 is just another step to our main goal, and it feels good.
So they are on to the Sweet 16 as they attempt to become the first team to repeat since, Florida in 06-07. So UConn, and at the next stop, it's San Diego State, right? So UConn, San Diego State, Illinois, and Iowa State in Boston. That's your regional in Boston. There will be Huskies fans outnumbering every other one of those schools in droves. We had a conversation with a reporter from the New York Post, a sports reporter, Zach Braziller, who joined us earlier in the show. He was walking his dog around the block when he was talking to us. So poor dog had to be inside. He's covering the tournament in Brooklyn at Barclays Center, and the dog needed to go for a walk. All right. Anyway, Zach was talking about the makeup of the fans there in Brooklyn and that, yeah, there were some Huskies fans there and they were loud, but they did not get as loud as the James Madison fans, right? So they were there for that Friday upset over Wisconsin and then were looking for something similar against Duke. That didn't happen. Northwestern had a nice contingent as well, but really, while the Huskies they had their fans get loud as they were pulling away. He doesn't think it'll be anything like what they're going to get or what they got at Madison Square Garden for Big East, but also what they're going to get once they get to Boston. All right, so you had that game. It's worthy of note because it's a one seed. And so North Carolina had already moved on. Purdue put up 106 points in advancing. And this was a close game for a little bit until they found their footing against Utah State. But ultimately, Purdue had no trouble. And so it's Purdue, North Carolina, UConn, who all cruise into the Sweet 16. And then there's Houston, who really makes its killing. Oh, that's probably politically incorrect. Makes its living, shall we say. Let's be glass half full. Makes its living on defense and just being physical. Essentially beating without getting called for fouls would be optimal. But playing so tough and so physical that their opponents are worn out. Beating the snot out of their opponents. Except Texas A&M, the Aggies have a similar style in that they also want to grind it out and they're going to push you hard. And what we got kind of made my eyes roll back in my head. What we got between Houston and Texas A&M, it was not aesthetically pleasing basketball. It wasn't. But it was redeemed by a crazy finish. So here's Houston, the one seed in the South. The one seed in the South. And they are well on their way. They've got a double-figure lead with under 2 minutes to go. Calvin Sampson with the stare and the arms crossed. And, hey, okay, we're not counting our chickens yet, or our cougars. But we're good. We're about to get to the Sweet 16 without any stress. Huh. Actually didn't happen to play out that way. Instead, Aggies start fouling the Cougars. Houston cannot make free throws. Keeps missing shots. You could tell they got tight, could feel the pressure. Meanwhile, A&M, they're playing with wild abandon. They've got absolutely nothing to lose. They go on a 17-5 run that's capped by one of the shots in the moments of the tournament so far.
Roberts fronts. Radford calls the break. No timeouts. Bounce in. Up top, Garcia for three. Got it! Anderson Garcia! His ninth made three of the year. Forges an 86 all tie. The red light is on. We'll have overtime. This place is in stunned disbelief. Everyone standing, some hopping and celebrating, some with hands on the back of their heads, bewildered, spinning around, staring at one another. What did they just witness? The one seed pushed to the brink has blown a 13-point lead.
I was just trying to do the little things, and that was something that I thought that I would be able to do to help the team.
Talk about an understated explanation for one of the shots of the year. If you haven't seen it, find it. It's phenomenal. But I will set it up for you. Houston's up by three with 1.2 seconds to go. And the ball is going to be inbounded from the baseline. So they're in the near court. A&M's taking the ball. But the Houston defense clamps down on all of the three-point shooters, right? Obviously, have to have a three because you're down by three. So you're not passing to anyone who's inside the lane or inside the arc, for that matter. No, all of these Texas A&M, well, Houston, whatever. All of these Houston defenders, they follow the A&M shooters from the stack, right? So they kind of line up in a stack in front of the inbounder. And as the shooters disperse, the Houston defenders go with them out to the arc, leaving Anderson Garcia, the big, all by himself. He's the only guy that's open. So when they inbound the ball to him, he has no choice. He has to shoot it. He doesn't have time to pass it to anybody else. But there's nobody within arm's length of him. He launches. It's nothing but net. The ball goes through the hoop. After the buzzer sounds, it's that kind of optic.
Garcia for three, got it!
Oh, it's one of those moments that dreams are made of. It was phenomenal. And Anderson Garcia, you couldn't have picked a more unlikely guy to hit that three. if you heard the phenomenal call from John Sadak, but if you hear John say it, only his ninth three of the entire season, not even 10 threes this year. Why? Because he doesn't take them. That's not his game. But it was last night. Awesome. Amazing moment. And again, Sadak nailed the call. So good. Well, then they go into overtime, and what Houston desperately needs is someone to hit a shot. And Emmanuel Sharpe does exactly that. He hits a three to open OT, and that kind of gets Houston back on track. And even with four starters who fouled out and are on the bench next to Kelvin Sampson, the Cougars survive. But when I tell you that that shot and maybe the overtime gave this game a little redemption, just trust me. Between the two teams, this is awful. As in, horror awful. Shaq's term. There were 75 free throws. 75. A&M doesn't lose this game if they don't go 29 of 45 from the free throw line. Oh, brutal. No one wants to watch that. And that's the thing about these two teams, is they play physical, they play tough. The refs were calling it tight. 29 of 45? That's... ew. That's what it is. It's ew. There's just so many fouls called. 24 fouls called against Texas A&M, 28 called against Houston. So put those together, you're talking about 52 whistles just for fouls. You guys, they play, now overtime is 5 minutes, right? So we'll take this game with overtime to give you the number of minutes. 45 minutes. That's more than a foul for every minute of play. Gross. But ultimately, Anderson Garcia, remember the name, and Houston goes on to win in overtime. And yeah, this is definitely a team that is all about fight and determination and culture. Jamal Shedd, who ends up with 21 points, 10 assists, he points to their coach as the guy who sets the tone.
He only gives credit when it's earned. He makes you work for it, and you know he always tells us, trust your work. So I think that's the biggest thing I've learned here, is that if you put the work in, he'll give you the opportunity to show that you've put that work in. And he has the ultimate trust in us, and we have the ultimate trust in him. He's the best motivator I've ever been around in my life, best coach I know in America. And you know, when a guy like that trusts you, your confidence level is through the roof.
Still blows me away in this day and age is in our top 10 players over the last 10 years, we've only had two kids transfer that was in our top 10. Now, we had some kids that didn't get to play much and they transferred, but they weren't in our top 10. We've only had two in 10 years. That tells you a lot about the kind of culture that we've built and the kind of kids that we've recruited. And that allows us not to give in.
Kelvin Sampson sets the tone for his team because he is tough and he is hard-nosed. And as Jamal says, he does not give you credit unless it's earned. If he has confidence in you, then you know. He's also all about family. His son is one of his assistant coaches, and he's big into establishing relationship. How do I know this? Well, because I covered his teams at Oklahoma, and he used to give us media members Christmas cards. No joke. He used to send Christmas cards to our homes. I mean, an amazing gesture that I have never experienced with any other coach that I've covered or worked for. And so he's a guy that, again, all about family, all about establishing that culture. He wants to win in a way that is worthy, shall I say. And I know he ran afoul of the NCAA, had a couple of different suspensions, and went to the NBA because he was violating recruiting rules, like too many texts or calling recruits at the wrong time. I mean, I get that. I'm not saying the man's perfect, but he's a good coach and he inspires loyalty from his players. Kim Mulkey does too, actually. And there was a Kim Mulkey moment, not the one that's getting a lot of attention, but one that I think speaks to who she really is or who she is when people either aren't watching or aren't paying attention, that is not quite in line with the loud outfits and the press conferences where she doesn't hold back. But it was a moment that really resonated with me after LSU advanced to the Sweet 16. Plus, Dave Roberts talking about Shohei Ohtani, who will meet the media on Monday with a different interpreter. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Here's Ohtani.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Two on and one out. He swings the first pitch, hits it into the left center field gap. That's a base hit. Here's Lux coming around third. He'll score standing. It is 5-2 as Shohei Ohtani comes up with his first run batted in as a Dodger.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Oh, Shohei Ohtani with the Dodgers, you say? Smooth transition. No issues, no headlines, nothing to see here. Move along. That's actually how I feel like the Dodgers have handled this. This Ohtani gambling scandal and the allegations against his interpreter, the alleged theft, $4.5 million strong, all this stuff. And the really confusing story with a timeline and details that just don't fit together. It's like trying to fit two puzzle pieces together that just don't fit. And you want to get done and you want to have the whole picture, but you're trying to jam pieces together that just do not go there. And that's how I feel about this story. The second one, not the first one, that's been spun by the interpreter in Ohtani's camp, who, if you didn't know, hired a crisis communications spokesperson. When the wire transfers, the $4.5 million was exposed through this whole federal investigation to a gambling ring. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, Tim Neverett on the Dodgers radio network. I listened to that second game in South Korea on the radio. No mention, as in nada, zilch, nothing. No mention of the scandal, the interpreter getting fired, the gambling allegations, nothing. And other than a couple of comments from Dave Roberts, as well as one or two guys who are willing just to say, hey, we're here for Shohei. We think he's okay. We hope everything's all right. No one's addressing it. The Dodgers aren't talking about it publicly. Major League Baseball has only indicated that they're starting an investigation. This is kind of funny. Ohtani's camp and his spokesperson has said, we've turned all of our evidence / allegations over to the authorities and they're now investigating, except a bunch of reporters are trying to figure out which agency or which law enforcement group. No one will acknowledge that they're investigating. No one at this point, they haven't been able to figure out who's actually investigating. Other than, the federal investigation into this gambling ring, which is not Ohtani specific. So Dave Roberts did answer some questions on Sunday, only to say that, yes, Ohtani has decided that he will meet the media Monday.
I think it's good. I think it's the right thing to do, and I'm happy he's going to speak and speak to what he knows and give his thoughts on the whole situation. I think it'll give us all a little bit more clarity.
So this was before the Dodgers played their first exhibition, I guess you could say, their final spring training games, but here back in the States. And the mob around Dave Roberts, oh yeah, it's significantly increased because of this Ohtani mess. Ohtani wasn't asked to speak by the Dodgers. They protected him when they were in South Korea. But now he said he will talk about the gambling allegations and about his fired interpreter on Monday. But how does the team kind of deal with these distractions?
Once you get here, people just get back to work and do their things. I think athletes, you know, by and large, have a very good ability to compartmentalize. And, you know, I think that that's just kind of how we're wired. And so, you know, once you get here, like I said, I wouldn't see anything different from the way our guys are preparing.
There's lots of fishy stuff going on here, but I don't know that we'll ever get answers. Part of the timing, I think, is worth noting. These wire transfers go back to last fall. The federal investigation into this bookie whose home was raided was in October. It's taken until now for reporters, specifically Tisha Thompson of ESPN, to put all the pieces together, or the pieces that they have anyway. It took a tip to the LA Times, and then other outlets start following it. There's now talk that Mitsuhara's resume isn't accurate. He didn't actually work for the teams that he had on his resume or go to school where he said he did. I'm not sure any of that's relevant. The only thing that really matters right now to baseball and to the Dodgers, and certainly to Ohtani, is that there's no smoking gun, if you will, to connect them all. There isn't one. And I kind of wonder, if there was one, wouldn't it have been uncovered by now? It's been months. But that's the big fear. I mean, there's all kinds of speculation about what happens with Mitsuhara. Does he actually face charges? Is he getting paid off? La, 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 la. But at this point, all of them are really focused on Ohtani and keeping him as clean as possible. Would he potentially face a short suspension for baseball simply because his name is on the wire transfers that went to an illegal bookie? Maybe. Maybe baseball does that just to make a show of it. But there are few athletes, if any, we may actually throw this question out there this week, few athletes, if any, that are more recognizable in the world than Shohei Ohtani. And this is not what baseball wants. Now, I don't think baseball is doing a cover-up, but I don't think they're interested in finding out anything else that might implicate Ohtani. And honestly, wouldn't that be the case with Mitsuhara too? If, it's a big if, but if he's being compensated for taking the fall, if he's the fall guy, if he's going to go away and they're going to pay him to go away, again, I'm speculating. I don't have any evidence that this is the case. But if it is, well, don't you want to protect his revenue stream then? Because it all hinges on Ohtani making the money in this contract that he signed with the Dodgers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Iowa tonight, the Iowa women, and Caitlin Clark and her Hawkeyes, they had a bit of a slow start in their first round game. Eventually found the groove. Caitlin did as well. But she actually said Coach Lisa Bluter has one request for them as they move forward into the second round.
Probably could have smiled a little more tonight. I think the first quarter kind of frustrated maybe all of us in a way. Like, this is a game you want to come out and dominate from the start because this is what fuels your run. And like Coach Bluter said, I think maybe we played with a little bit of rust. And I think the biggest thing is, like, they really packed the paint. They just sat four people in there. So it's really hard to drive to the basket. And then when you miss a few long shots to start, it's kind of like what you do. But I think, like Coach Bluter said, is, like, we really started running our offense in the second quarter. And then, you know, I was able to create some plays for my defense that turned into offense, especially late in the game. And then just tried to bring more energy. But, yeah, I think I was a little frustrated. But I feel like that comes from knowing what it takes to be where we want to be.
For Caitlin Clark and the other Iowa seniors, so like Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall, definitely their last game at Carver Hawkeye Arena. So they will host tonight for a shot at the Sweet 16, taking on West Virginia. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. You'll hear a lot of stuff about Kim Mulkey. You'll hear her get snarky about a reporter from the Washington Post. You'll hear her rave about this hit job that she says he's doing and call him a sleazy reporter and all that jazz. What you may not see, although you could find that it's out there on video, her consoling a Middle Tennessee player who was crying after LSU pulled away and eliminated the Blue Hens. One particular player dressed in all blue was crying her eyes out. And Mulkey's the one that put her hands on her face and consoled her and told her it was going to be okay. That's the kind of woman she is. All right, we'll talk tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.